Mr. Huntington, tell me about this meeting in South Korea.
So the idea, the background, of course, is that there's there are negotiations underway for an international agreement in the Central Arctic Ocean to make sure that the fisheries don't come before science. In other words, we don't want fishing to start in an area about which we know not nearly enough to be able to set responsible and sustainable fishing quotas. And so the meeting in Korea was, I guess, of twofold purpose. One, to better engage the Asian countries who are very much active and interested in Arctic affairs in the discussions about that agreement. And secondfold, to particularly to engage them in the discussion about how to do the science that you would need to support responsible fisheries management. The Asian countries, of course, are very active in Arctic research. Korea, Japan, China all have icebreakers, all make regular cruises, all participate in a number of international arrangements about coordination and cooperation on science. And so the hope is to engage their interest and expertise in the fisheries issue specifically.
Who was present at the meeting?
We had the meeting was hosted by the Korea Polar Research Institute, so we had several scientists from COPRI, as it's known, as well as scientists from Japan and China, a scientist and also a representative of a major fishermen's association in Russia, an academic and another former fisherman from Canada, and then a few Americans as well.
How much official representation from, departments of fisheries from various circumpolar countries were there?
I think not a whole lot in terms of official government agency representatives. This was more a meeting of the scientists who are active, but several of the participants, I think, are participants on their several of the participants in the roundtable in Korea are also members of their respective national delegations to the international negotiations, the latest of which was held earlier this week in Washington.
Now, we this year especially has been a record year in terms of sea ice receding. It's not affecting all of the Arctic in the same way. There are parts of it that are, much more open than the others. How is this affecting the fishing that goes on there right now?
Well, at the moment, there is no fishing in the Central Arctic Ocean and very little around the marginal seas of the Arctic. The two huge fisheries that exist are in the Barents Sea, north of Norway but south of Svalbard, and in the Bering Sea, south of the Bering Strait, north of the Aleutian Islands and between Russia and the U.S. There's a large fishery in, a fair bit of fishing going on in Baffin Bay on both the Greenland and Canadian sides, but really very little other than traditional local subsistence hunting going on in the Arctic Basin proper.
How much do we know about fish stocks in the Central Arctic Ocean?
Next to nothing. And I have a question I haven't yet gotten an answer to, but I wonder if anyone has ever caught a fish in those international waters more than 200 miles offshore. And this became a topic of discussion at the meeting in Korea, and the phrase that seemed to catch on was the missing middle. And the idea was that we're missing both the geographical middle, the middle of the ocean, beyond anybody's EEZ and largely off the continental shelves, and also that we're missing the middle, the ecological middle, which are the fish that connect, say, the plankton at the bottom of the food web and the marine mammals and seabirds that are at the top. Now, a lot of studies look at different aspects of, say, primary productivity or plankton distribution. Many icebreaker cruises and other things going on in those regions will keep an eye on and keep a log of, say, polar bear sightings or sightings of birds or beluga whales if they encounter them. But very little has been done on fish.
And so The idea, again, is to find out what's there before we set quotas?
Exactly. You know, if you look at the history of fishing in most of the world, it's a question of fishing starting because fishermen are very good at finding fish, and they do that. And then later on, try to establish a scientific basis for figuring out how to manage that fishery. You know, frankly, if the fisheries are managed, and you know, the state of fisheries management on a global level is not great. But even in places such as the Bering Sea, where the fisheries management today is very good, we have an unfortunate history, especially in international waters, of fishing first and studying later. So in the 1980s, there was a very active fishery in the international waters in the middle of the Bering Sea. That prompted international negotiations and eventually an agreement on among the major fishing nations, and of course including Russia and the U.S. on either side of that Bering Sea donut hole, as it's called. But unfortunately, that agreement, by the time the agreement was signed, the fish were nearly gone and remain down today, so that there's still no fishery in those waters.
In terms of international law, how does it apply to the fishers? Which parts of the ocean trawlers and other fishing boats are allowed to go and fish? How does it work?
So under the UN law of the sea and similar international laws, each country controls its exclusive economic zone, or EEZ, out to 200 nautical miles, about 370 kilometers off of its coast. So within the EEZ, the water column and all the fish are the property of that coastal state, and they can set the quotas and determine what management is going on and either open or not open those waters to foreign vessels and so on. Beyond 200 miles, it's the high seas, the international waters, and those are subject to other management, but there's no default management for the high seas. So in areas such as, say, the North Atlantic, there are a couple areas of international water there surrounded by the EEZs of the neighboring countries, and there's been set up a regional fisheries management organization, or RFMO. In this case, the Northeast Atlantic Fisheries Commission, and their job is to then set the terms in the management of fishing in the international waters. For the Central Arctic Ocean, there is no mechanism like that except for one small slice of the pie that is at least nominally under the control of this Northeast Atlantic Fisheries Commission, although I think that's just a geographical quirk in that they set their scope to be a certain slice of longitude, and it happened to go up to the North Pole. There's, as I said before, there's no fishing going on there now, and I don't think that organization ever really seriously thought about its role in the Central Arctic Ocean. But the majority of the waters in the Central Arctic Ocean, which is an area about the size of the Mediterranean Sea, are currently subject to no provisions or agreements. Some countries, such as Norway, have a part of domestic law that says that no Norwegian vessels can fish in areas of the high seas for which no management scheme exists. So under that law, Norwegian vessels would not be allowed to go into the rest of the Central Arctic Ocean and start fishing. But I think Norway's more the exception than the rule in that regard.
How about the indigenous populations in the United States, Canada, Russia, you know, the Sami in the Scandinavian countries? What role do they play in these fisheries?
So this is, if we're talking about the waters 200 miles offshore, that's a long way offshore for, you know, the traditional indigenous hunting and fishing activities. However, we do know that, for example, the beluga whales that are hunted in the Mackenzie Delta, the Inuvialuit Settlement region in Canada, and along the coast of Alaska, sometimes swim well out into those international waters. And so, you know, assuming that they're out there for some reason, if one were to go out there and start fishing, it could have an effect on the beluga whale populations that the Inuvialuit in Canada and the Inupiat in Alaska rely on. And so the indigenous people of the area, I think, do have a strong interest in seeing good governance in the region. In this regard, the U.S., both the U.S. and Canada have national fisheries policies for the Chukchi and the Beaufort Seas in Alaska and the Beaufort Sea in Canada that do not allow fishing, big, large-scale commercial fishing, until there's been enough evidence to show that there's at least what in U.S. law is called an ecological surplus. In other words, we don't know if there are enough, say, Arctic cod or saffron cod there to sustain both the fishery and the marine mammal and seabird populations that eat those fish. And so in the absence of knowing that that we could take some of the fish out without harming the ecosystem and the food web, under U.S. law, you can't ban a fishery, but you can have a catch quota of zero. And so the basic idea, I mean, those provisions have been supported by the Inuvialuit and the Inupiat because they protect the ecosystem on which those indigenous people rely. And so the Central Arctic Ocean Agreement is basically an extension of the same concept to the high seas.
So where is that agreement now? How far are we from it?
So there have been a couple of negotiating sessions. The five Arctic coastal countries, which are the U.S., Canada, Russia, Norway, and then Greenland or Denmark on behalf of Greenland, they issued a declaration last year saying that they agreed that they would not start fishing in those waters until there was sufficient science and an appropriate management in place. Since then, they have invited the likely countries that would be involved in such a fishery, the countries that have a history of distant water fishing fleets. Those include the European Union, which negotiates fisheries as a bloc, Iceland, Japan, South Korea, and China. So the one way people have been calling this is the Arctic 5 plus 5, the five coastal states plus the five other distant water fishing nations. They have now met twice. They met in December in Washington, and they met earlier this week and again in Washington, and are working their way towards an agreement of some kind. The details are yet to be worked out. There's some back and forth over what structure it should take. There's one important question is how you might set up the mechanism by which an agreement not to fish would transition into one of these regional fisheries management organizations if and when the time comes that we have enough knowledge and we know there are enough fish there to set up a fishery. My understanding is that the next negotiating session will take place in Iqaluit in Nunavut in early July of the summer.